Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Juta Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamsta Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitantam Sajivam Sarvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitantam Nama Shrestha Manamapi Satchi Putra Trasvarupam Rupam Tasya Graja Madhupuri Matrim Gostavatim Radha Kundam Girivarmaho Radhika Maravasam Prapato Jasya Pratita Kripaya Sri Gurun Tanmatosmi Prabhu. There's some question.
Maharaj, there is one question from, online question from Belarus, Belarusia, Belarus, asked by one of our devotees. She's saying Hare Krishna. And ideally, I want to be in a spiritual environment, meaning sadhu sangha probably. But there is no opportunity for that because of some obligations I'm entangled with, like family obligations. And what can I hope for in that situation? And just that is her question. She would be thankful if you just say something about that.
Well, a philosophical question comes to mind. If Krishna wants to reveal himself to someone, can anything obstruct that? If it is the will of Krishna, can anything prevent that? So there comes the question of faith. And Guru, Vaishnava, Saru Shastra Guru and Vaishnava, the absolute revealing himself in relative circumstance. Is there some particular relative circumstance where he cannot make himself known? I'm speaking these things in a rhetorical way with the understanding that in each case the answer is, of course, not. So that's the good news. If Krishna, if it is his divine will to reveal himself, for the Absolute to reveal himself, make himself known, there's no relative circumstance that can prevent that. That's good for us. What comes to mind is in Rupa Goswami's sloka collection, the sloka with regard to the holy name, Akrishti Kritacheta Sam Sumanasam Tschatanam Amukha Loka Sulava Mukhya Sriya No Diksham Natchasat Kriyam Purushcharjam Managikshate Mantra Yam Rasanas Prageva Palati Sri Krishna Nam Atmaka. Saying Sri Krishna Nam can spring out of the soil regardless of its pH content, whatever it is, if it is the will of Krishna. No diksham, na cha satkriya. There's no prerequisite for this other than Krishna's will. And beginning, middle, and end, devotees are resigned to the will of Krishna. But rather, we should think that if someone, as expressed here, is sincere and fervent in their prayer in a very difficult circumstance, what would be generally taken to be a difficult, mundane circumstance, then Krishna will be extra merciful to them, because in the midst of relative difficulty, they're still, they're lamenting that circumstance. Lamentation has its value in Krishna conception. Everything, when connected to Krishna, it has a value, and sometimes very high value, and can yield the desired thing. So the lamentation, the genuine lamentation of a heart for the absence of Krishna consciousness, is Krishna conscious, is a good thing. It reminds us, even in a very high sense, of the last verse of the Shikshastakam, and we should remember the Shikshastakam is expressed by Mahaprabhu, but he's mirroring the sentiments of the heart of Srimati Radharani. This is where Guru Maharaj came with the golden volcano, divine lava conception, to show it's a very intense, ecstatic eruption of heart. Indeed, just as the volcanic eruption, the lava, it's reached a temperature and intensity, it can no longer be contained, and then there's this eruption, right? And then the lava comes streaming out. So he's saying, the heart under pressure, under the pressure of separation, but the sentiment growing greater and greater, but separation pushing against that, squeezing the heart as it were. Then this volcanic eruption of divine sentiment. So there, and given in the Charitamritam, because we should note that this is in the conclusion of the Antya Lila, the Shikshastakam, final verses of Shikshastakam presented there. Asli Shiva Parvatam Panastumam Adarshanam Marhamatam Karotu Va Yatatata Va Varadatu Lampato Mat Prana Natastu Sareva Napara Adarshanam Marhamatam. This is very peculiar and poignant and relevant. Even though this is such a high expression, still it's all-encompassing. So there's something there for the aspiring servitor section, that what is being addressed is how to continue faithful adherence in Krishna consciousness in the absence of Krishna. Adarshan, not apparently not seeing Krishna. Apparently Krishna not appearing. Because we could think that in the presence of Krishna, enamored by the beauty, charm, sweetness of Krishna, then everything will be all right. But in the absence of Krishna, and that is relevant to our situation, from the higher devotees in a higher sense separation, but it is the only realistic perspective, consideration for those in our position. So there's some hope and there. And it reveals the sort of faithful adherence that's necessary in Krishna culture. That in the absence of Krishna, consciousness to continue. Just as Srila Guru Maharaj, he once said that if you think that you're Krishna conscious to any degree, he didn't say, that's unhealthy or counter to devotional culture. His words were blunt. He said, if you think this way, you're finished. An extreme position. He said, you're finished. He didn't say, it's not the best. No, he didn't say that. Or it won't be helpful to, no. He said, you're finished. So what is this Krishna consciousness that, because if you think, you're in possession of that thing, then it's something else. Again, it cannot be Krishna. That may be the expression of the highest devotees. That's another plane. Maru sneha, grita sneha. That's another thing. But in this position, always one of aspiration. And that means one does not possess what they seek. Adarshanam. In the midst of no Krishna, the absence of Krishna consciousness, if one can go on and Guru Maharaj said that if you can candidly, honestly admit that after all you may have invested in Krishna culture, that you have nothing. Maybe you've gone minus. Going in the opposite direction. But you say, I have no other shelter, I have no other interest, this is what I seek. Guru Maharaj said, in the midst of that acknowledgement that you have achieved nothing, in fact, you're going wrong, but you have no other shelter and nothing else is worth pursuing. He said, then you might just be a devotee. Even then he wasn't saying, then you're a devotee. He said, no, you might. Then you might be a devotee. That you keep pursuing Krishna and Krishna culture, Krishna consciousness, in the absence of the same. With no apparent Krishna, no substantial achievement. That sort of tenacity is required. Like the Olympian athlete, they're training, they're giving everything, they're everything to achieve this goal. And we know only one person can get the gold medal. Right? Then they have gold, silver, bronze. But all these others, thousands of others, put in the same time, the same training, maybe even more in some cases, they do not achieve the topmost thing. And still, if you were to inquire from them, well, wasn't that a waste of time? They'll say, no. It was worth every moment. Because they consider that the pursuit is so noble, so high, so wonderful, that everything that was invested in that pursuit, they wish they could have given more. It's not based merely, solely upon this ultimate achievement. That's the type of devotion or dedication is required. Srila Guru Maharaj points out, this sort of dedication we observe, I told, and the Olympian, and the businessman, and the worker, in so many different ways. He said, should we think that in pursuit of Krishna consciousness, the amount of the level of dedication, intensity, sacrifice will be equal to that, less than that, greater than that? For the ultimate achievement, should it not be not only equal to that, but greater than that level of self-sacrifice? And which seems, just from an analytical point of view, to be a a proposition that is not commensurate. It's not properly balanced. Now, on the one side is the finite. On the other side is the infinite. So the finite will sacrifice the whole of its finite self and achieve the infinite. That seems, from the purely analytical point of view, not fair. Why should the infinite have to give the whole of the infinite? Even if a finite sacrifice, their whole finite is that, infinitesimal compared to the infinite. But we're told by Rupa Goswami and all the great devotees, such is the power of devotion, which is synonymous with love and affection. It's not that there's mundane love and there's spiritual love. Love means spiritual love, actually. Prem, Krishna prem. Sri Krishna Karshinicha sa. Rupa Goswami says, if someone possesses a drop of that divine substance, it's sufficient to bring the infinite under the control of the finite, which is the hallmark of devotion, where the infinite comes under the control of the finite. But what is especially enchanting to Krishna is under great adversity that one pursues Krishna consciousness. They remain faithful and adherents. In the Bhagavatam, we have the example of Kunti Devi, Vipadak Shantutak Shashvad, Tatra Tatra Jagad Guru, Bhavato Darshanam Yatsyad Apunar Bhava Darshanam. She is reflecting on her life and her pastimes with the Pandavas and Krishna, and she comes to a very peculiar conclusion. She's saying, when circumstances are very seemingly favorable, relatively easy, that there's a tendency to be forgetful of Krishna. Things are going very nicely, right? Overwhelmed by smooth flow of karmic circumstance. Right? Like we're told about the demigods, that why Jiva Goswami said that is not desirable. Human life is more desirable because in a hellish condition, there's just abject suffering. There, enjoyment, unobstructed enjoyment, forgetfulness of Krishna conception and then the desirability of engaging in spiritual culture. So he's saying human life is preferable. But Kunti says, so when things were relatively okay, then there was a tendency to forget you. But when I was put under great adversity, then my remembrance of you was very intense and earnest, and I had a great necessity to remember you and take shelter of the remembrance of your lotus feet. So in retrospect, it would seem to me adverse circumstances are my friend. And this is what's the word? Congruous? A word like that? With the prayers of Brahma and the Bhagavatam. Tattenukam pam susamikshamano bunjana yavapam kritam vipakam. Whereas in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna told Arjuna, matra sparshas tu konteya shitoshna sukadukada agama payano nityastam titikshasva bharata. Saying the world and the way it is, and then and surrounded and surmountably by karmic circumstance, what is my advice? Tongs titikshasva bharata. Tolerate the way you tolerate unpleasant weather conditions, the way you make adjustments for the seasonal changes. Deal with the world in that way. That's one level of advice given by Krishna to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. But the Bhagavatam, Guru Maharaj said, takes it a step further, where Krishna is telling Arjuna, Tatenukam, not Krishna and Arjuna, but Brahma, his prayers to Krishna, Tatenukam pam susamikshama. Try and understand, if you look, samiksha means to examine, to consider, to analyze. Susamiksha means with greater scrutiny, to acutely examine, right? So he's saying, if you will look deeply in whatever circumstances you find yourself in, you'll realize the mercy of Krishna. The friendly hand of Krishna is there in the background. He's saying, from a deeper level of analysis and scrutiny, if you go deep, you'll always see the friendly hand of Krishna there. He's not putting you in some circumstance to take you down. Right? He's not trying to smite thee from the face of the earth because you did something wrong. Bhoktaram yagyatavasam sarvalokamaheshwaram. Everything's meant for Krishna's enjoyment. And not a blade of grass moves without the will of God. Yagyatavasam. Sarvaloka Maheshwam is the supreme controller of everything. He's in control. Remember, it's the demonic, the asuric, who Krishna says, what do they say? Iswaro ham ahang bogi siddho ham balavansi. I am in control. It's like humanism. One humanistic slogan after another. I'm perfect, I'm powerful, I'm number one, I rule, I'm the best. He says that's a suric mentality. A humbogi, I'm the enjoyer. Siddoham, I'm perfect. Balavan, powerful, suki, and happy. But actually that is Krishna's position. Bhoktaram yagyatavasam sarvalokamaheshwaram suhridam. So you would think such a person is unapproachable. What about me? We're nothing. You just said we're infinitesimal. Yet complementary aspects of the infinite. But then he says the good news, Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. I am your dearmost friend. So if, like in this world, if your dearmost friend is in charge of everything, that's good for you. Right? That means you have some, in a sense, some special privileges. Not to abuse, but it's very encouraging. You think, oh, the person, everything's being controlled by someone who is friendly to me, not someone who is against me. It seems to people in life that everything is arranged in such a way as to make their lives miserable. Or that life is a never-ending series of humiliation. Like, you know, life is so short. That we have to die. Oh, life is full of suffering, varieties of suffering, and it's so short. A never-ending series of humiliation. But actually, susamiksha, it also means examination, test. So when the teacher tests the students, does that mean that the teacher is cruel? Our teacher is so cruel. We thought she was nice. Now she wants to examine us. Why? Everything was so happy and smiley, and now examination has come. Or the so-called, what is it, the pop quiz, flash quiz, where everything's going on, they're studying, and then the teacher says, okay, close your books. And without enough, now there's a test. And everyone, it's not that the teacher is cruel or against the student. Actually, the teacher wants to help the student advance to the next level. But sometimes examination is required, and sometimes examination without notice is required. It's meant to help the student because it will identify our faults, right? Tolstoy said that in life you discover your faults, and fortunately you're given time to correct them. This is the formula. You find out what your faults are, and then you have time in life to correct those faults. That's a very generous way of looking at things. And if you don't, then kalos me, time I am, the destroyer of everything, at last, mercy in another form. So this examination, Kunti, she thinks it's a good thing. The Bhagavatam, Brahma Stuti, he's saying it's a good thing. It helps promote the student to the next level. So when we look at the world situation and this sloka in the Gita, Krishna is saying, if you realize that for whom everything is meant and who's in control of everything, that Suhridam Sarvabhutanam, he's the dearmost friend of every living being, then what'll be the result? Instead of being in never-ending, unceasing anxiety, what will happen? Gyatva mam shantim richchiti. You see the word shanti there. Gyatva, he's saying, knowing this, If you can know this and believe it and understand it, then you'll get some peace. You'll think, oh, he's not against me. So these circumstances, ostensibly, immediately, locally, it's displeasing, upsetting, discouraging. But if I look on a deeper level, I say, oh, Krishna's in the background. Krishna's in control. He's put me in this circumstance. It must be ultimately for my benefit. How can I benefit from this? How can I go forward, make progress? And then just something very high that comes to mind, and not to imitate, but to know that such a sweet plane is there. We're told, I mean, look, speaking of humiliation, the great souls, when Sukadev shows up to the scene of Parikshit Maharaj and all the assembled sages, we're told, children were running after him, throwing things at him, calling him names, making fun of him. It didn't touch him. Man shunyata. He doesn't have the ego that can button that you can press by this kind of misbehavior. But what they're astonished to see is when the naked 16-year-old boy who appears like a mad urchin enters the assembly of all these sages with the big beards and their, that they all stand up and bow and they elevate the boy to the presidential seat. And he is the mouthpiece for the Srimad Bhagavatam. So those who were hurling insults and throwing things, they had to reconsider things. Why all these great sadhus are bowing to this boy? But we're told Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was also seen by some perhaps young, foolish people as being a madman. And they're, to Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, they're throwing things and calling names. And Guru Maharaj said, and what was his response? Because he has that deep level of vision, he said, Krishna, I know it's you behind all of this. You're using these boys to say these things, to throw these things. It's you, Krishna, who are doing this. But, and only Babaji Maharaj can say that, and he said, and I know how to deal with you. I will complain to Maa Yashoda, and then you'll be in big trouble. That's what I will do. So not to imitate that, but to understand that such sweetness is there. Have to look deeper to see that. When Jagadananda Pandit, out of love and affection, you know, he wanted to make a bed for Mahaprabhu. And he took two bahirvas and then some cotton from a certain tree, and he made a beautiful bed and a little pillow and everything, and dyed it saffron and presented it to Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu rejected it as being unfit for a sannyasi. And he said, Jagadananda, he wants me to enjoy. And that hurt the feelings of Jagadananda Pandit. We're told Swoop Damodar, he figured out, he took some banana trunks, and you can see those threads in there. He separated them all, and he made some kind of a bed that, after much pleading, Mahaprabhu accepted. Jagadananda Pandit brought the sandalwood oil, maybe like 15 kilos of it, because Mahaprabhu in his divine madness, his head is overheating and his body and the thing. if we put the sandalwood oil, then it'll give him some relief. And Mahaprabhu said, when he saw that, he thought, no, I'm a sannyasi, I can't wear this perfume. He said, people will think I'm keeping a woman secretly. But he said, but you can, what'll be good though is give it, offer it to Jagannath. And after much pleading, the Mahaprabhu said, no, really, that's what I, just give it to Jagannath. And he said to Jagannath, I heard you brought, and Jagannanda Pundit now was very angry. He said, I didn't bring any oil. There's no oil. He took the whole pot and smashed it in front of Mahaprabhu, and there's sandalwood oil everywhere. And he went to, slammed the door, went to his room and locked the door. And he was, started fasting. As we're told, Jagannanda is like the queen, Dwarka queen Satyabhama, has this type of mood. And then Mahaprabhu was thinking what to do, and he went like, knocked on the door. Said, Jagannanda, I would like to eat prasadam cooked by your hand today. Jagannath, oh. You hear the door slides open. Jagannath goes to the very making many things, presenting to Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu is tasting this and saying, maybe what is cooked with the intensity of that anger is even more tasteful. And then Mahaprabhu actually says, here, make a plate for it. We'll, you and I will take prasadam together. Think of how affectionate Mahaprabhu is for his devotee. You and I will take prasadam together. But Jagannanda Pandit saying, finding some excuse, no, I will take separately. And he's giving Mahaprabhu more and more, and we're told he's feeding Mahaprabhu so much, it's like enough for 10 men. And Mahaprabhu has to keep eating to get Jagannanda's like temperature to come down. He wanted Mahaprabhu's temperature to come down. Instead, his went up. Now Mahaprabhu's bringing his temperature down. And eating, eating, and then finally Mahaprabhu suddenly, stop it. I can't eat anymore. Jagannanda, oh, yeah. And later he takes something. And Mahaprabhu wants to rest, and he's saying, is Jagannanda taking prasadam yet? And Govinda goes, and sees Jagannanda, yes. And then Mahaprabhu, oh, okay. Then he can rest. So, oh, and when Jagannanda Pandit, we can say Jagannanda Pandit's a hothead. And Vrindavan, he told, he wouldn't, when he wouldn't accept the bed from Mahaprabhu, then he's now angry again. Mahaprabhu was saying, what to do? Jagannanda Pandit said, I want to go to Vrindavan. Give me permission to go to Vrindavan. Mahaprabhu said, no, you only want to go to Vrindavan because you're angry. And Jagannanda Pandit, no, no, I've wanted to go to Vrindavan for a long time. No, it's just because you're angry. No, I really want to go. Then he pleads the Sripadhara, please convince Mahaprabhu to let me go to Vrindavan. Finally, they let him go, but Mahaprabhu tells them, when you're there, stay always with Sanatana Goswami. Don't leave Sanatana for a moment. And of what you observe of the local people, keep your distance. They have some special relationship with Krishna. don't mix with them, don't imitate them, just keep a respectful distance. He goes to Vrindavan, he's with Sanatana Goswami. We know he can cook. Jagannanda cooking, and he sees Sanatana Goswami Prabhu is wearing a saffron turban. And Jagannanda, it makes him ecstatic. He's thinking, oh, the cloth of Mahaprabhu he's wearing as a turban. How wonderful, the dearest servitor of Mahaprabhu. And so he's there. So this is from Mahaprabhu. And Sanatana Goswami, oh no, it's from Mukunda Saraswati. He gave me that. And Jagannanda, what? And he has the pot there and he's thinking, he wants to punish Sanatana Goswami with the pot. This type of person. And then Sanatana Goswami says, actually, you're right. He said, this color, the Raktavesh, means red colored, he says, is not fit for Vaishnava. It's very interesting. So later, when Srila Saraswati Thakur shows up in Vrindavan in saffron dress, flanked by two disciples in European dress, the people, the local, they're very upset about this. The local Babaji's and Jata Goshai, others. And they cite this reference. They say, Sanatana Goswami Prabhu says in Chaitanya Charitamritam that this color is not fit for a Vaishnava. Right? So what are you going to say to that? So if you look, Saraswati Thakur's purport in that section, it's very beautiful. He says, we consider, Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Raghunathan, they are like our supreme Guru Varga. They are Paramahansa Vaishnavas. Paramahansa is beyond Varnashram. The highest aspect of Varna and Ashram, the highest Ashram is sannyasasram in the Varnashram system. Paramahansa is beyond that. So Saraswati Thakur said, we don't consider ourselves that, but rather, like Pujala Ragapat, Gaurava Bhange, Matala Sarujana Vishaya Range, we're there above as worshipable, and the white dress of the Bhavani, and a rung beneath, a step below, from the Varnashram position, we're serving them. Just when Srila Guru Maharaj and Srila Keshava Maharaj, they met some Babajis in Vrindavan who were upset by the preaching of the Gaudiya Math because it was diminishing their prestige and calling into question their authenticity and their Vaishnavata. So Guru Maharaj started explaining to him that actually we consider the Babajis our guru, but thinking, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan, Raghunathan, and so on. And he said, and the man started becoming very happy, and Guru Maharaj is explaining how they're in the higher section and we're lower, and he's getting more and more happy. And then he said, and then Keshava Maharaj said, but we don't consider that you are that. Keshava Maharaj said, the man said, why are you giving the Brahmin thread freely to non-Brahmins? And he said, What is higher, the Brahman thread or the kopin of the Babaji? The Babaji vase. And they have to say, no, that is higher. But that you give to anyone, everyone, regardless of their varna. And then so much praise for the Babaji, his family coming happy, and he's saying, but just understand, we don't accept that you are that, that you are Paramahansa Babaji's. So why did I say that?
You recited Sanatana Goswami's
saying. Oh, and Jagadananda Pandit. Right. And reading, how to read circumstance. Oh, this is what I want to say. That, so, when Jagadananda Pandit is apologetic to Sanatana Goswami, he's so happy, actually, he's saying, because if the circumstances were not arranged this way, I wouldn't have got to see this type of affection that you have for Mahaprabhu. Hare Krishna. You understand? He's saying these circumstances, they shone a spotlight on the sort of intense love and affection you have for Mahaprabhu. And I feel myself upgraded by that. So this was all good. That's the point that I was trying to make. So we can't have a stereotype about what is the favorable circumstance or not. It's whether we can connect it to genuine Krishna culture, Krishnanushilana. Right? Krishnanushilana doesn't mean what I like doing within Krishna consciousness. It means what's actually pleasing to Krishna. So when Rupa and Sanatana Goswami came to join Mahaprabhu, in the dead of night they met him in Ramkeli, and right then and there they could no longer contain themselves and their secular life. Now that Mahaprabhu was coming out and preaching in earnest, they wanted to join with him. So they meet with him and show such great humility. But Mahaprabhu tells them, now is not the time. So you return to your so-called family life and your position in the world. And at the right time, I will call you. And there he quotes that, what is it? Parabhyasini sloka, where he says, the wife who has a paramour, she's even more attentive to her household duties, to not arouse suspicion. But within her heart, she's always thinking of the paramour. So sometimes the devotees find themselves seemingly, inextricably surrounded by karmic circumstance, which we've generated. So Guru Maharaj is saying, externally, you can show some, you can acknowledge that obligation, because it really is a result of our own doing. It's karmic reaction. But within the heart, one is always remembering Guru and Vaishnav, Radha Govinda Mahaprabhu and their divine associates. And lastly, we can say, God helps those that help themselves. Or Gurudev, he sometimes would quote this Bengali saying that You know what a blacksmith is? Saying, the blacksmith says, give me some metal and I'll make you a sword. You need a sword to cut through on. Give me some metal and I'll make you a sword. So something has to come from our side, right? At least in the form of like willingness to dedicate oneself and offer one's energy. There's always something that can be done. Right? When Krishna and Balaram are walking through the Vrindavan forest and Krishna starts praising the trees, really, as much as for Balaram, for Krishna, the trees are like they appear to be bowing. They're like giving, done the offering their fruits. Sometimes they're crying in ecstasy, they're shivering. But Krishna tells Balaram, oh, look how the trees, how happy they are to see you and serve you. And he says, they are such magnanimous souls. Why? Because they're giving themselves for the service of others. Right? And remember, this is the chapter that precedes the Yajnik Brahmins. So there's a hint of what is to come. So look how magnanimous they are. They're always offering themselves in service to others. And there, this sloka, which also appears in Charitamritam, perhaps in chapter 7, Adi Leela, Etavaj Dhanmasapalyam, and then, you know, Kai Manasav, you know, I forget the rest, but it's saying, you can always serve in some capacity with your body, mind, words, your wealth, your intelligence. There's always something that you can do. So, if in the midst of such trying circumstances, one laments that they cannot do more, that's a good thing. Follow that thread. And you can see it's indirectly bringing about some intense remembrance of Krishna and his devotees. Anything else?
Question from Enakshididi Santa Cruz. Dandavats De Maharaj. The movie Hare Krishna, the mantra, the movement, and the Swami who started it all, is on the tour in the States now, sharing the touching story of Srila Prabhupada's life and his mission of spiritual revolution in the Western world. Can you please share your favorite stories about the precious time with Srila Prabhupada and his beautiful personality? Thank you.
Many things to consider, but I recall being in India with Srila Prabhupada around the time he was translating the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam. And by that I mean more specifically Prahlad Charit. the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj and also the preaching of Prahlad Maharaj, which was very favorite to him. The slokas, Janmaityunari Grihamedi Sukham Vitucham, Maya Sukhaya Baramud Vahato Vimuddhan, Matir Nakrishne Paratak Satova Midopi Padyeta Grihavatana, Madanta Gobir Visitam Tamisvam, Punak Punak Charvita Charvananam. And that sequence, Natevidu Swarkatam Vivishnu, etc. And being bathed in the dust of the lotus feet, Abhishek, Niskinchananam, Navrinityam. But he is so much emphasizing preaching that as the primary means for not only extending Krishna consciousness to others, but as an indispensable part of your own development, fulfills both. You will develop to the maximum, and you'll be extending Krishna consciousness to others. And I remember on a walk, Prabhupada liked to walk around these kunda, the pukur, the ponds. Some of the ponds in India, they're filled with lotus flowers. They're surrounded by flowers. And on this one morning, there's like a narrow footpath. So Srila Prabhupada leading, you know, with his cane, and we're all following behind. And he bent over, there was like bushes with some beautiful flowers, and he bent over, picked two flowers, and he went, put one behind this ear, one behind the other ear, and he went, started walking. And then all the, we all shamelessly imitated Prabhupada. We were jumping on it, pulling the flowers, and then we put flowers behind our ears. And so in single file, Prabhupada leading the way, you see this whole group going around circumambulating the kunda, and everyone has two flowers behind their ears. But leaving that place, Prabhupada liked to walk in the morning. But we're in some park, and there are many Indian people who walk in the morning, and dignitary people. And then Prabhupada decided to sit, but he's very quiet this one morning. And so everyone else was quiet, like no questions, nothing, just because some walks Prabhupada would talk and playful banter or mock fighting the scientists, Rup Damodar, things like that. But sometimes in India, a different mood he's showing in this particular morning. He's not saying anything. And sort of giving the impression that no one else should say anything or ask him questions. So then he sits beneath this tree. We're in this park in Delhi, and we all sit around. We're chanting, Prabhupada's there. And these men are going by. And as when they see Prabhupada, they give pranam, and one group of men come by and promise, oh, I know that man. And then, but they keep going, and then he left it, and I thought, it really seemed like he wanted to continue that. So I paid my dandamat, and then I went up, and I sort of ran down, and those men, and I said, my Guru Maharaj says that he knows one of you, or yeah. And one man says, like, I saw him at the Delhi Pandal. And I thought, oh, okay, maybe this is the man. But then another man said, he used to come to me when I used to sell him paper for printing his books. That means the Srimad Bhagavatam. I went like, oh, yeah. And so that seemed like it was going to be it. And then before I went back and they said, tell us, why have you come to India? For peace of mind. Like that. And I was chanting and we're with Prabhupada and Prabhupada in the Prahlad section of the Bhagavatam. Where he's saying, I have no difficulty, but for others, we can take Krishna Nam, but for others, we're trying to extend to them. So I said, the reason I've come to India is to give you peace of mind. And they all went, oh, you know, Baba. Yeah. Anyway, then I said, I can chant Hare Krishna Mom, mantra, I don't have any problem, but I've come here to give you peace of mind. Then I went back to see Srila Prabhupada, and he's there, but he's like waiting for a report. Yeah. And I said, the one man there, he said he saw you at the Delhi Pandal. And Prabhupada said, that is not the man. I'm like, oh, okay. And I said, well, there's another man there. He said he sold you paper for your Bhagavatam. Yes, that is the man. And I'm like, and then he became silent again. And then I was wondering if I should tell him the rest or not. So I said, because he was so quiet that day and great. And I said, Srila Prabhupada? And he looked up like, this better be good. You know? And I said, they asked me why I've come to India. And then like that caught Prabhupada's attention. And, you know, they asked me if I came to India for peace of mind. And I said, but I recall you're preaching Prahlad Maharaj saying, we can take Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we have no problem. I said, but I told him, I've come to India to give you peace of mind. And Prabhupada said, you said that? And I thought, oh, now I'm in trouble. I've insulted these men. He said, you said that? And I said, yes, I said that. And Prabhupada said, this is preaching. This is Krishna consciousness. And like in the song, the shower. That made him happy. That's why he brought us to India, was to preach to the Indians. So they're thinking, oh, we're coming to India to get peace of mind and such things. But Prabhupada brought us to India to actually preach to the Indians because he thought they will take this seriously if it's coming from Westerners. Even though we don't have samskar, we're less qualified, it's still, they're so enamored by Western civilization, as Saraswati Thakur said, Western civilization, crush it. So he knew they're enamored by Western civilization. So that has to be defeated. And Prabhupada's strategy was then bring Westerners to India. And we can see how perfect that idea was and how huge the expansion of his movement in India has been to this day. So it was a perfect strategy. Hare Krishna.